America's game. Now, so I'm in this, everything done changed. That Warp Tour made you open your brain. Eric Vanek is here, so remember the name. He got the waiver wire for the week. Tell you who to start and who to give a seat. Dropping the podcast every week. You know the knowledge is elite. After the show, we gon' hold a Lombardi. Celebrating like we throwing a party. This the blueprint and I know they gon' copy. Obama intros always go the hardest, cause this is America's game.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to America's Game, episode number 74. I'm your host, Eric Vanek. You can find me on Twitter at EricVanekNFL. Follow the show at America's Game Pod as well. And I am once again joined by my co-host, T-Rock, again this week. T-Rock, what's going on, buddy? Merry Christmas. When people are listening to this, it'll be a day after Christmas. So Merry Christmas to you, buddy.
Merry Christmas to you, Evie. How are you doing?
Oh, I just couldn't be better, buddy. Couldn't be better.
Yeah, it takes a lot of dedication, a lot of energy just to week in, week out record these shows. So we appreciate you. We appreciate all the listeners tuning in every week.
Yeah, I would say I usually hit the wall earlier, but I think I finally hit the wall the last week. So, yeah, I've made, what did I do? I posted it earlier. Let me look it up real quick so I don't mess it up. I made 18, or I went 18 and 16 in my 34 semifinal matchup. So I made 18 finals. So
wow.
I was hoping for 20 was my goal. Came up a little bit short of it, but yeah, Jalen Hurts fucked me on a couple.
Yeah, he did the same to me.
I had one with Hurts and Penix as my two quarterbacks. That one was, I don't even know if they got like fucking 20 points combined.
Yeah, that would have been tough.
Yeah, so Penix and they just smoked the Giants, but it was all in the run game.
Yeah, I was in the what is it called? The divisional or whatever you call it. This last week of playoffs, and I was in five matchups. I got to two championships this upcoming weekend. I lost one by only a couple of points. That was pretty gut-wrenching. But, yeah, I had Hurts in two of the other matchups that I lost. One wouldn't have made a difference. Freaking Nick Ercolano and Fade the Fetal absolutely destroyed me. I just played all the wrong players. I was the number two scoring team throughout the entire year. I had a juggernaut team, but still set up to succeed for next year. But I had one sixth seed who I did not even want to make the playoffs, and I had one of the highest scores I think of the entire year thanks to JT, which is kind of bittersweet because of all the people that we fucked over on sitch, you know, start. So I don't know, I've been thinking about that all week, but that's gonna be fuel for me improving my process so we can avoid those types of things in the future.
Yeah, I mean, there is no exact science to start sit. There just isn't. Like, sometimes you're going to be right, sometimes you're going to be wrong. You literally have a 50-50 chance on every call you make.
Yeah. So,
it's tough. I mean, Taylor had a good matchup. It wasn't like it was terrible, just the other guys that were on there usually had a better matchup. I think we maybe have said Patrick Taylor over Jonathan Taylor at one point. That's probably wasn't a good idea.
Yeah, but I was really caught up in the moment of just getting too honed in on my rankings and not thinking about the bigger context, not thinking about, you know, who Jonathan Taylor is as a player. We picked the wrong Taylor for sure.
On that one, yeah, we did for sure. But yeah, I made 18. You said two?
Yeah, I made two out of five.
Two out of five, and I made 18 out of, what was it, 67 leagues? So 18 out of 67, I made it.
Nice, nice. Yeah, and that one that I'm a sixth seed, I'm playing the infamous McNutted. So That should be. He said, it's me and Rock as God intended it. So I got to beat Big Corey, too. So that was a little bit of a icing on the cake, too. But, yeah, it doesn't really matter to me. I'm in the same kind of mindset that you are, where it's just like it's been a long season. I'm kind of just looking forward to the off season. That's my favorite time of the fantasy football year. You know, the getting into the rookie research, you know, doing my different series of articles. So that's what I'm most looking forward to. But I need a break, you know, for the next couple of weeks too, so I can just enjoy playoff football.
Yeah, I love watching playoff football because it's always just the best teams going at it usually. You get some really good matchups there. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that as well. And then I'm looking forward to getting into draft content because, you know, we're going to have a lot of running backs that are coming into the league this year. Some decent wide receiver class isn't as strong as it usually is. But we're going to get an influx of some serious, serious running back talent. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
You know, got a couple quarterbacks. See where these teams go. Like, free agency is another huge one. I love free agency. It's always fun to kind of who gets cut, who goes where, all that fun stuff too. So we'll be breaking that down as we get closer to that too.
Yeah, it's going to be really, really awesome. I'm super excited for the RBs in this class, but I'm also just excited for all the later round guys that just kind of come out of nowhere and all the unique backgrounds and stories, you know, of some of these players, and just the road that they have to the NFL draft is just absolutely one of my favorite things to be able to look into.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so let's get into it here a little bit. You wanted to talk about some of the stuff that you learned this year, some of the maybe things that were successful, maybe some of the things that were not so successful. So I'll let you lead it off here, and I can kind of piggyback off of it with my thoughts. But what are some of the stuff that you either found successful for you this year or not successful?
So one of the things that I learned just through going through, I spent a lot of time, you know, with analytics, trying to get the best roster construction. And one of the things that I actually kind of came to, you know, up when I actually had a conversation with Fizz, I try to check in with him, you know, every couple of weeks. You know, sometimes when I'm feeling kind of low, he's a great person to be able to talk to kind of just remind me like why we're doing this, you know, what the best things about, you know, being able to work for South Harmon and be able to provide all this awesome content for people. And I was just telling him like we could spend all this time putting in all this research and all these different players and try to like almost split an atom when it comes to how many different metrics that we look at. And at the end of the day, I realized like when you get too much into the analytics, you can kind of forget about the love of the game. You can kind of forget about, you can be willing to trade away some of your favorite players just because maybe they're underperforming in a warp or maybe their team isn't as good. And I had to get back to the heart and the why of what I absolutely love about football. And so I'm completely shifting a lot of the different focuses that I have when it comes to my rankings, when it comes to my roster construction. And there are certain players that when I watch, it's just more of a personal bias. It's not even analytics driven, that I absolutely just love watching. A lot of it has to do with just their story, just the way that they perform in big time matchups. But that's where I'm kind of shifting my focus. So I actually ended up creating different tiers of like my most loved players. And it goes, I have actually different, what is it? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I have 7 different tiers from loved to thankful, really like, appreciate, indifferent, and don't like. Those are the 7 different tiers that I've created for different players around the league. And that's going to be my main focus that I look at for when it comes to different types of players. What about you? Is there like, do you view things that more that type of way of just players that you like or don't like, and you're just going to ride or die with those types of players? Or are you going to be more analytics driven, more warp driven when it comes to production and players and roster construction?
I think I think for me, I'm going to be more analytics driven, and I'm going to be more, kind of all about the stats, the opportunities for these guys as well. Just because, you kind of look at some of these guys, and I can't like say, oh, just because I like this guy, I'm going to rank him higher. I get myself in trouble doing that. Like James Cook. Wasn't a big fan of his. Like, I just didn't think his body size, his body type would stand up to an NFL workload. And, 2 years in a row, that guy has just kicked me right in the dick. So I got to change my focus on that. Devin Achane, I didn't draft a whole bunch of him. I drafted some, but not as much as I probably should have. And now look at him. Like, the dude's a stud just because of his body weight. So that was something I learned from last year, and I kind of got a little bit better on it this year. Like, I had more Bucky Irving, I had more of those smaller type guys where I was okay with it. This year's class coming in 2025, we don't have to worry about that because they're all fucking tanks. So I love that. But that was one I learned last year, and kind of improved on it this year. So I was happy for that it kind of worked out more for me. And it's kind of it, same thing, like just because of a guy's size and weight and all that kind of stuff doesn't mean he's going to be a terrible player. Oh, like we've never seen a guy do this before. But okay, so we have Devin Achane who's killing it. You have Kyren Williams, who's smaller. We have James Cook, who's smaller. Austin Eckler did it for years. Those types of players are, they could still be very fantasy relevant. It just kind of depends on their situation. And then just kind of learning these coaches, their schemes, how they use players, what historically have they done. So like Blake Corum, perfect example this year. Like the Rams have always used one running back under Sean McVay. Like you had the Gurley years, you had the Daryl Henderson years, obviously with Kyren here. Like I have a shit ton of Blake Corum because I like him. He never got hurt this year, which thank God he didn't get hurt because he had gotten multiple injuries the first 2 seasons. And then this year he finally stayed healthy, and Corum didn't get as much run, so that happened. But I know, when it comes down to it, if Kyren does get hurt, Corum's gonna step right in and get that same kind of a workload. So getting players like that too, and just kind of learning people's, the coaches' schemes, how they use their players, stuff like that, as well. And then one more thing I wanted to bring up too, that I've learned this for a couple years now. It's not just this year, but you were mentioning about getting frustrated and stuff like that. The one thing that I have learned, and I could be a grumpy fucking prick sometimes. There's no doubt about it, especially
Really?
after I lose fantasy games.
That's kind of shocking.
The one thing I learned is I am not looking at any of my scores, any of who my opponent has, anything like that until after the 4 o'clock games are done. Then I'll go through and look and see how I've done, because I have sat there refreshing all day long my scores after every score and just being so miserable and so pissed off because my team isn't fucking scoring and my other the my opponent is just kicking my ass. I being in so many leagues too, I find it easier for me not knowing who they have. I might remember a player or two, but I don't remember the whole lineup. So, that helps me a lot too, like to not like actually enjoy the games. Enjoy watching the games. Watch, I mean, it's I live in Cleveland, so it's hard to watch fucking Browns games. You're not gonna be enjoy watching that. Watching fucking DTR fucking at quarterback. Anyways, so I can watch Red Zone and I can enjoy the game and watch all these players and not get pissed off if Jaden Daniels scores a touchdown or Kyler Murray scores a touchdown or whoever it is. Like, I could just sit back, enjoy the game, watch it, know that I probably have a share of every single player in the league. Like, there's like very few guys that I don't have any shares of. And I know it helps me in some way. So that helps me enjoy the game too, is like not worried about my opponent's lineup or my own lineup. Like, sure, I know my lineups in my head and I know who's doing good or who's not doing good, but I don't let it really affect me all day, because I would come in on Mondays and stuff, and I would be so fucking miserable and so pissed off at the world and everybody. That's just how I am.
Yeah.
That's one thing I've always learned.
Yeah, I think part of the reason why I'm shifting more towards this, if the more that you get into analytics, the more that you show how much of a crapshoot there is, how much variance there is, and you can have players like we've talked about, like Tank Dell, like Jalen Waddle, even Jonathan Taylor, who haven't done much, you know, this whole year. But then in the playoffs, everything can change. And for me, I feel like I do not want to only just spend all the time that I do when it comes to wanting to better my own teams and want to help other people out with their teams, just only focusing on the analytics. I think I've just gone a little bit too far with that. And you can just have everything great, look great on paper. You can have all these tools that Koopa and JCap and other people on our team have developed that are amazing tools, but they should supplement your love for the game. I really want to focus, especially when it comes to my writing moving forward, why we don't want to just fall in love with the production of these players and stuff like that. I feel like that's just, at least for me personally, I don't want to just only look at, you know, these human beings that are, you know, really doing amazing things on the field, only look at them that way. So like for me, a lot of the time, the players that maybe I loved, but then traded away either at market value or, you know, not for that much, they end up producing when I needed them the most. So, I mean, part of the reason why I'm doing this, like I traded away earlier this season, like after like the third or fourth week, Joe Burrow, for Jaden Reed, a first, and Derek Carr. Like on paper, that trade, you know, after the first month of the season looked fine. Jaden Reed was absolutely killing it. But Joe Burrow he's a top four quarterback for me. He's one of my absolute favorite quarterbacks in the league. In making trades like that, it's just like, man, like it's not just that I feel like I lost that trade looking back on it. I mean, I was fine at the time. But Joe Burrow is one of my favorite players, like in the league. And I want to be able to think about stuff like that. Another one was Puka Nacua. I got offered Puka Nacua in a second for the 105 during the draft. Puka Nacua is one of my all-time favorite players, especially now. He definitely is. It's him and Nick Chubb. I did not take that trade, and now I'm really kicking myself for not taking it. I have Roma Dunze, who I still really like as a player, but I looked too much at the trade value at the analytics. I had put a lot of hope on Caleb Williams and Roma Dunze absolutely killing it this year, and it didn't turn out to be, you know, obviously where we wanted to be with him. I still have a lot of hope in him. But there are just certain decisions that just look great on paper, and we could kind of just put our heart on a shelf. And I just do not want to keep playing that anymore. So I think people could get more enjoyment out of the game if they supplement maybe a little bit more of the players they really root for, especially at the end of the year when those players, they could still erupt. There's a reason why we love these players. It's not like they don't show up or don't produce at all ever. So that's one of the things that I'm more looking at doing in the next upcoming seasons. And I really want to be able to, you know, bring their stories to the forefront and give the people even more reason to want to root for these guys and stick with these guys. So I know it's very different than a lot of the processes that we look at South Harmon, but I don't know. I think it's going to be, I don't know, something that's worthwhile that I'm going to bring to the table when it comes to my writing moving forward, as far as that goes.
Another thing I wanted to ask you about, see if you learned anything from it, is the whole draft process last year. So obviously we had basically everyone was either Caleb Williams or Marvin Harrison Jr. at the 101. And then the other one would go 102, usually in most leagues. obviously it plays out. Jaden Daniels should have been the guy. We should have been taking 101.
Mm-hmm.
And Marvin Harrison really hasn't done shit this year. Like, it's been okay, but I think it's more of a Kyler Murray issue than it is a Marvin Harrison issue. Because if you look at Kyler's stats for his whole career, like, they've been pretty poopy. Like, I don't think – I still don't think he's thrown over 4,000 yards in a season. He only has 16 touchdowns this year passing, and he's played all year. He hasn't missed a game. So – That's a whole separate issue. So with Marvin Harrison, do you think we were just overhyping him way too much? Like, should we just not be taking? I mean, I don't want to say, like, he's still a really good talent. Should we just be taking the quarterbacks that are like top five picks pretty much, or at least have rushing ability? Should we be taking them over these wide receivers no matter what, no matter if it's Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers, or in 2 years here when Jeremiah Smith or Ryan Williams come out? Should we be just be taking the quarterbacks every single time?
Well, a lot of my answer is going to be informed by, I did an article in the offseason before the draft, rookie hit rates. I did like a 5-part series on rookies. One of them was rookie hit rates. Another one was rookie insulation. Can you tell me how many since 2018 to 2023, how many rookie wide receivers have been selected in the top 12 of dynasty drafts from the 101 to 103 that have been top 12 players at their position,
Let's see.
Because there hasn't been – there's been a decent amount of wide receivers that picked 101 to 103. How many of them have had top 12 seasons?
Because I'm trying to think, because, like, Justin Jefferson wasn't taken that high.
Nope.
The only one that I could think of off the top of my head is Ja'Marr Chase. And maybe CeeDee Lamb went that high, but I don't know if he even went that high.
Ja'Marr Chase was the 106 consensus. He was not a top three.
Yeah,
pick.
Okay. Yeah, I remember because I got him at 106 in a bunch of leagues. So I'm going to guess none.
That's exactly right. 0%. So we were trying to defy the odds with Marvin Harrison because he was a can't miss prospect. And that 0% is going to remain 0%. Ja'Marr Chase, by the way, is the only rookie wide receiver. So he was selected the first wide receiver in his class. He went ahead of Devontae Smith, Jalen Waddle, and Rashad Bateman. He is the first and only wide receiver that we've selected first that actually produced as the best wide receiver of his class. Every other class that we've ever had, it's never been the first wide receiver off the board, and that's going to be the same for this year. It's going to be
Nabers.
It's going to be Nabers or probably BTJ. Actually, it might be BTJ. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we tried to defy the odds, and it's going to still remain that way as well. When it comes to, you also asked about quarterbacks. So if you look at specifically just the 101 to 103, 66.67% hit rate. That's one top 12 season. That's PPR. It doesn't matter for quarterbacks, as far as PPR. But yeah, we've had a much higher hit rate. But then actually the best of all the positions is tight end. 100% hit rate if you draft a tight end at the 101, 103. That's usually a generational. The second best is running back, 71.11%. So quarterback, it's the most important position in Superflex, but it's – yeah, I think wide receivers moving forward, I don't want to keep testing that, even with players like Marvin Harrison. And we weren't wrong about – I don't think we were wrong about Marvin Harrison Jr. Everyone, you know, in the industry, it was either him or Malik Nabers. Matt Harmon and Reception Perception put him and Rome Odunze as two of the best prospects he's ever, you know, scouted. It just – has to do a lot with the situation that these players go into. And that's just something that we have to be better at, you know, as the industry moving forward, is just understanding the coaching, the quarterback, the schemes, and not just these wide receivers. We can't put it all on these players moving into these teams about, you know, having these really crazy expectations for him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still not regretting taking Marvin Harrison Jr. Is he still a top five overall receiver in dynasty rankings? I don't know, but he's probably still at least top 10. Like, he's still super talented. Like, I'm not, like, discouraged by him or anything. Like, his stats this year, he only has 51 catches, 726 yards, and 7 touchdowns in 15 games so far. So,
yeah,
he only has 2 100-yard games. I definitely would have put the over on that if I would have came into the season. But I think it's just kind of like the situation, too. Like, the Giants, all they have is Neighbor. So obviously he's breaking like all these records right now. Most catches by a rookie and most 100-yard gains by a rookie and all that. Brian Thomas Jr., kind of the same thing.
What was his rookie stats? Marvin Harrison's again?
51 for 726 and 7 touchdowns.
All right. Yeah, I think he might be more on – because it took a couple of seasons for CeeDee Lamb and Garrett Wilson to really explode. I think that they still had better rookie seasons, but that's the other thing is, too, is if you don't really like Kyler Murray, he's not going anywhere either. That's the other thing that's right. Really tough as well with his situation. But, yeah, we got to give these guys – 2 to 3 years to be able to develop. We're very impatient as dynasty players, and I do not want to sell him or Roma Dunze. I still think that they have all the talent in the world, so I'm right there with you. I'm not ready to give up on Marv.
It's a Kyler thing for me, and I've kind of harped on this for years. His most passing yards in a season, one season of 3,971 yards. He has 2 3,700-yard seasons. And then, 2022 and 2023, he got the injury in 2022. 2023, he only came back and played a little bit. So I'm not going to hold that against him. But this year, another full season, he only has 3,288 yards, 16 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. The most touchdowns he's ever thrown in his career in a season is 26.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, 26 is like very, very average. And it hasn't been very good, ever since. Like that 2020 season, that was his year that he threw for a bunch of yards and ran for a bunch of yards. He just hasn't been the same since that season. So yeah, I think it's a little bit of a Kyler issue. I'm not saying Kyler's a super, super terrible quarterback or anything like that. I just don't think he's like elite, like Josh Allen and Lamar and all these guys. Like, you go into a draft next year, a startup draft, Kyler's what, the 10th quarterback off the board, maybe 11, 12. You might take some of these, Caleb or Kyler Murray. I'd probably take Caleb just a little bit on the upside, even though Caleb didn't have a very good year either.
Yeah. So one other thing that looking at rookie value insulation now. So if you're thinking about what to do with your Marvin Harrison or other rookie wide receivers, Roma Dunze shares, Xavier Worthy, I wrote wide receivers are the toughest bets to make in the first round, likely due to how difficult it is for prospects to break into the elite category early on in their career. It doesn't help that the deepest position has the lowest hit rate percentage either. So there is going to be likely a massive amount of panic selling in the offseason with Roma Dunze, Xavier Worthy, and Marvin Harrison. So if you still believe in them, you can get them probably for a really great discount. But all across the board, 3/4 of all your rookie picks are going to lose value after the first year. That's just the way it goes. Only a quarter of them maintain or increase their value. So for every Jaden Daniels and BTJ and Ladd McConkey that you have, or Brock Bowers, there's going to be more than 3 times as many players that will lose their value after the first year.
Yeah. Just looking at, I don't even think there's even going to be a discount on Marvin Harrison in the offseason. I think he's still going to be like He's going to be like Kyle Pitts was for years. Like, oh, I still want three first for Kyle Pitts, you know, after like his first two seasons. No, it's going to be like that kind of a deal with Marvin Harrison for me.
But his rookie year was his best year. Kyle Pitts is. I mean, that kind of makes sense. He did have a historic as far as yardage goes. He only got like one or two touchdowns, but his yardage, I mean, that's what people were holding on to. I don't know what people are going to be holding on to still value him as a top 10 wide receiver, or, you know, 2 to 3 firsts. But, yeah, once the next class comes up, I don't know, you might be able to catch somebody wanting to or being willing to trade away Marvin Harrison for one of these incoming rookies. So,
yeah, I could see that. Like, if somebody wanted to trade away their Ashton Jeanty for Harrison, I think that could be a conversation.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens there, though. Anything else that you kind of wanted to talk about that you either learned or
that was a big part of it. So another thing that I looked at when it comes to trades specifically. So I brought up the Burrow trade that, you know, I regret making when I look at it now. I think a new policy that I have moving forward. So the last couple of years that I've been riding, I give people what I call a schedule. So like at the beginning of the year, be willing to trade your thirds. When you get to the half point of the year, be willing to trade your seconds. Hold on to your firsts until, you know, right when they matter most, when you can be able to make that pivotal move either right before your trade deadline, or if you don't have a trade deadline, hopefully you can make that trade, you know, in the middle of the playoffs. I'm going to not just only look at my picks that way moving forward. I want to look at the players where they're ranked the same way. So, like, I traded away Joe Burrow after the first month of the season. Joe Burrow is a top – he's a first-round dynasty startup pick. Yeah. Anywhere from the 104 to the, like, 108, depending on your draft. So I'm going to start viewing players that way as well. Any of the players that I have, you know, in the first – round of dynasty startups, I'm not going to trade it till the very end of the season if one of them gets injured and I absolutely need to make that trade. So I'm just pivoting from not just looking at picks and valuing them as far as that trade schedule goes. I'm going to start doing that with players as well, because the other thing is too is that these players have really crazy value insulation as well, and to be able to trade any player that's valued, you know, in the top 12, top 24, you know, way, it's just a huge risk, especially if you really love that player like I do with Joe Burrow. So I'm going to start viewing players that way. That's one of the things. And also too, rookies, if you get like a rookie like Bucky Irving or BTJ or Ladd McConkey, it's just like I'm holding on to those players as long as possible when it comes to trading. Because a lot of times rookies, they take a full season to develop, or multiple seasons to be able to develop. So I'm not trading away rookies at the beginning of the season, no matter what the hit rates may say and stuff like that. Last year, if you traded away Sam LaPorta or Dalton Kincaid at the very beginning of the season, you're really kicking yourself.
Puka.
Yeah. So I'm thankful that some guy traded me Puka Nacua for Wandale Robinson in a second. At the beginning of the season last year.
I remember on this program, we talked about it, and Mike made many trades where he traded Puka to get Quentin Johnston.
Yeah, like, I don't know. It was like some insane, like 5 to 7 different, all the shares that they had, they traded all of them away. I'm like, oh my God. Yeah, that would have been awful. I would have been devastated. So yeah, that's one thing I'm starting to do with trades and stuff like that. And another personal note is I'm not going back and forth with people anymore. If someone doesn't view a player the same way as I do, I'm going to be like, all right, thanks. And that's it. I'm just going to keep moving on. I'm only in like 12 different dynasty leagues, but man, my time just becomes more and more precious as I get older.
Right.
And I'm not going to go back and forth with people anymore. It's either you accept it or I'm moving on. That's it.
So I'll piggyback off that point, but I wanted to make one more point off of yours first that you made. So Scott Connor told me this a couple years ago, or he mentioned it on a podcast or whatnot, and I agree with it. Like, when I have those elite quarterbacks, the Justin Herberts, the Joe Burrows, Jaden Daniels, Josh Allen, Lamar, all those guys, like, the only way I'm moving them is if I get another one in those tiers back.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm trading Josh Allen and I get Lamar back, okay, that's fine. I can make that. I'm trading Mahomes and I'm getting Jalen Hurts back. You know, somebody in the same tier. Like, I will trade within the tier, but tiering down on these quarterbacks, I just won't do.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a something for the listeners to think about, is like, when you have one of these elite guy quarterbacks, like, don't trade them unless you're getting another one back, because it is very, very hard to get them back without having to, like, you know, literally give up the naming rights to your first kid.
Yeah. The other thing is also too, I was debating, I'm still not sure how I feel about this, but trading a player like Jared Goff and Dak Prescott, I have them like the same tier. Right. I helped this guy out who's now in the championship by trading away Jared Goff for Dak Prescott in a second. And it's just like, all right, I have him in the same tier. Jared Goff at that point in my, you know, in my analytics process wasn't doing that great. And Dak Prescott, I'm just looking forward to next year. But, like, did I leave too much meat on the bone? Because, of course, you know, subsequently he had, like, two 40 to 50-point games, and then probably the rest of the season is going to help this guy win a chip. And I wonder if, because I go back and forth on, do I want to be a great, easy person to trade with, you know, just trade at market value, or do I want to be someone that gets a little bit more value, you know, kind of more the Mike McNutted, you know, where it's just like, all right, you really need this player, you're going to really pay for it. So that's another thing that I continually go back on. Do I want to be someone that's easy to trade with and just trade at fair values, or do I really want to get more, you know, out of these trades, especially during the playoffs? This guy was completely fucked. It was a start two quarterback league. So it's just like, it's not even super flex. So I completely bailed this guy out, and now he's in the chip for it. So that's another thing I go back and forth on. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, do I help somebody out? I have helped people out before. Like, if, you know, they're my buddies, like McNutted, you, Dynasty Barry, Scott, like, you know, my buddies are in the championship. I don't mind helping them out if we can make a deal that's, you know, helps both of us out. Like, it's not like, you know, I'm just like giving the player away or collusion or anything like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't mind doing that. But on continuing on the trade topics, like, I am notoriously one of the hardest people to trade with, and I fucking hate trading with people. I absolutely just despise people, honestly. Like, just some of the offers I get are like, what the fuck are you thinking? And I think my offers that I send, okay, maybe some are, you know, shitty sometimes. I think most of my offers, I think, are fair. But if you, you know, they just think that, you know, it's the worst fucking trade in the world. You know, that's so terrible. And I'm like, that, you know, okay, I don't see it from your point of view. But it just, it jades me. Like, I just fucking hate trading. I can't stand trading with people. Like, it just, it really bugs me to, like, want to trade with people. So maybe you could help me out here. Like, do you have some tips of what I can do? And then another thing that I think I hit my limit this year of leagues. Like, 67 leagues is a fuck ton.
Yeah.
And there's just some leagues, like, I'll sit down and on like a Wednesday when I'm off of work, and I'll be like, you know what, today I'm going to throw some trades out there. So I'll go to like two or three leagues and throw out and like look at their rosters, look at my roster, and kind of make some trades, try to get some players that I like or whatnot. And I'll throw out the offers, and 95% of the time they get rejected, you know, immediately, or I don't even get a counter back or anything like that. And then, you know, I get to like the third league and I do that, and I'm like, fuck, I'm tired of this. I don't want to do this anymore. Like, I was all enthusiastic to do trades, but there are so many leagues and so many things. Like, I just don't have enough time in the day to go through all these rosters and just make trades. Like, if I didn't have a job and need money to pay bills and all this stuff, and I could sit here all day, I would probably be fine with it. But like, you get home from working, or you have a day off, you want to relax, and like getting through like three or four of these teams, and then you're like, oh, fuck this, man, this is boring. Yeah. So like, I don't know. Help me out here.
Okay. So one of my absolute favorite things to talk about is trading. Actually, I did a 3-part series on trading. So one of the ones that I wrote was called Proactive Trading. That's when you're going on the search for a trade. There's also another article called Passive Trading. That's when if you're in rebuilding mode and you're not necessarily looking for deals. But so I write about timing, opportunity, and rapport. So when it comes to timing, I write that you have to begin with an understanding of your trade partner's team needs and their willingness to part with certain assets is the best way to start a negotiation. I think one of the things, reasons why I try to stick with having my portfolio at being 10 to probably 12 to 15 dynasty teams max is so that I can focus on the trading. You having like almost 80 different teams that you manage and stuff like that, that's going to be one of the things that suffers. So it's just going to be like, yes, you're just not going to be able to have that time to be able to do that. Now, as far as opportunity goes, are the ones that when you look through research before they become talking points. So that's a major reason why I do the analytics that I do and stuff like that. I want to discover these players before anyone else is talking about them. I want to discover the Bo Nixes or, you know, other players of that ilk before they become like, you know, household names and stuff like that. So you have to put in the research, but the rapport is the most important thing. So I write about, you know, like, don't be an ass or pushy, be succinct, like straightforward to the point. You want to be as painless as possible. You don't want to be, you know, too much invested in these trade negotiations. People can get extremely emotional and upset and stuff like that. But
me.
The best thing to do, like I learned in my, I took a trade or not a trade negotiation. I took a negotiating class when I got my master's. And one of the things they talk about is just like, you just start with asking what they want and then you just see if it aligns with yours. If what you guys want are completely different, then don't be the guy that tries to give an argument or explain to us who do this content why or why not that this player is worth or not worth it and stuff like that. I don't want to be mansplained to right. about why these players are good or bad or anything like that. But the other thing is, too, I think the thing that's helped me the most is if you want to use your time this way, be available as a resource. So I like to tell people as soon as I create a league from the very beginning is like, hey, I'm here to be able to help you out. Even if it works against me, I want to be a resource to you, even if it's for other deals and stuff like that. You can always come to me and ask me. I will give you an unbiased, impartial view of whether or not you should or should not do that. So a lot of it just comes down to just rapport and stuff like that. So I think those are all different things that you can be looking at. You can spend the time looking at warp, see where your teams are lacking. But yeah, there's kind of no way around being able to put in a little bit of the work. I try to help people with the buy lists and the people that maybe they can move off of, but that's why we have the warp tool. That's why I write these articles, is to help expedite the process when it comes to being able to trade. But yeah, I pride myself on my trading. I'm usually the number one or number two person that executes trades in every league. So yeah.
And I'm probably dead fucking last, to be honest with you. I mean, I've made some trades this year for sure, but not as many as I probably could have. I just, number one, run out of time, and then the ones I do offer, I don't get offers back, or they don't accept it, or whatever it is, whatever the case is. And I'm like, I don't have time to sit there and listen to the argument or have an argument about it either. So I just like move on. Like it's not working or whatever. I'm not going to argue with you about someone's value. I find 90% of my trades, like the guy overvalues their players, which is common in all these trades. Like all their guys are overvalued. They're like a whole round higher than what they are really. So that frustrates the hell out of me too. And makes me not want to trade.
The other thing that can also save you a lot of time. So I looked at, I compiled all these trade stats for all my leagues, for all the different seasons I've been in these leagues for. The top four negotiators, the ones who execute the most trades, they encompass on average 60.9% of all the trades. So if you want to save yourself some time, go to the top four negotiators in your league. And yeah, that could save you quite a lot of time. If you're at the bottom, you encompass 1.2% of all the trades. So
that's me.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trading has always been one of my weaknesses. Not that I'm a bad trader or anything. I just get so frustrated with people, or I don't have the time. One of the two, or a combination of both. So that's usually what happens with me. But no, those are some good points, some good advice that I could definitely take in the next year for sure, and hopefully the listeners can as well.
Yeah, and if some guys just keeps blowing up your phone, I mean, I had to tell someone earlier this year to fuck off and stop bothering me. You're fucking annoying as shit. So it's just like, don't be afraid to be like, yeah, I know, I was kind of out of my norm and stuff like that, but I'm kind of getting to that point at this point of the season. I'm like, dude, I'm not going to keep arguing with you about this kind of stuff. People get pissed off at me specifically because I like to employ what they term as the auto accept trade block. I'm kind of pissed off at Scott Connor kind of coining that term, where it's just like no matter what. So of course, if I put someone for a first, they want to send me the fucking 112 instead of the 105 or 106. It's like, well, you just put a first down, so you just have to accept this.
So me and Scott came up with that, and what you got to do is, you know, if you're doing it on Sleeper, you know, put, you know, if you really want any first, then just write any first. But if you want, you know, I'm trying to think like a good example,
like a mid first, early first, 20,
yeah, mid first. Yeah. So you write down like, I will accept like the 104 to the 109 pick. You know, that's my threshold for this player. So either send me that pick if you have it or not. Now, if they want to send me a 111 and, you know, maybe they're 211, okay, we can have that conversation. I'm willing to negotiate a little bit. But yeah, I usually am strict to my thing, my whatever I say I want for that player. I would say 90% of the time I get the owner that sends me whatever I ask for, and I hit accept and we move on. But you know, you'll get a couple of those guys like, okay, I want a third. And then they send you a fourth and a fifth. Like, no, I want a third, not a fourth and a fifth there, chief. So,
yeah, I want to stop, you know, employing the auto trade block nearly as much. I'm tired of people treating it like, I've been told you need to treat it like a grocery store. I'm going to come in, this is the price I expect to pay, I'm going to pay it. And it's just like, that's not the way it works. The way that I'm going to treat it is like, I'm selling a house. I'm going to put a listing price. And you know what? I also have the option to be able to say, no, fuck you. I don't actually want to trade with you. So when people get pissed off, they give their worst possible offer that technically, you know, crosses that threshold. They give me the 112 when I was looking for the 104 or 105. And they're like, you have to accept it. You put this price on. Man, that's fucking annoying as shit. So I'm going to be like, no, I don't have to. So, but the best is I'm starting to figure out who's like that. And I'm willing to even give a better deal to somebody else just despite them. So that's where it's getting to me.
I mean, I get what you're saying, like, of what you want. I think you just have to be more specific on your trade request. So don't be afraid to write down, you know, hey, I want the 104 to 110 range. Like, I'm not taking anything less than that.
Yeah. Yeah. I could probably spend the extra time to be able to do that. And yeah, maybe it just comes down to me not wanting to spend that extra time to do that. If I'm being honest.
Right.
So
I think, I think this conversation is another one we could have during the off season here. Like, it would be a good, like, February or March episode. So maybe we'll revisit that in a couple months and we'll do like a whole trade episode, me and you, and maybe we get somebody else on here too, to get their opinions too. And just kind of talk about trading and all that stuff, because I know personally I have to get better at it. I have to not get as pissed off and emotional. I have to, you know, do all this extra stuff. So I know it's one of my weaknesses. It, like, does it affect me, you know, winnings wise? No, I still do pretty damn good every year, even if I don't trade. But it does help, you know, a little bit too. So I think that's a good episode that we can do in the off season here.
Yeah, that sounds great. The art of the deal, man. That's just one of my favorite things to discuss. I really pride myself on my trading. So yeah, that'd be awesome to be able to talk about it during the off season.
Yeah, we definitely will, for sure. We'll have time. All right. Well, let's wrap it up here. Unless you got any other ones that you want to talk about real quick.
No, the only thing that I'm going to talk about in my future articles, I'm going to look into, I'm going to see if my ranks outperform Warp. If they don't outperform Warp, I'm probably going to save myself a lot of time moving forward and maybe not look into that as much. But yeah, I'm curious to see if my analytics can outperform Warp, if there is much of a difference between those two things. I'm going to look at playoff schedules, what you just talked about with trades and stuff like that. Do trades actually help you during the playoffs, or were you kind of already, was your fate already sealed before entering the playoffs? What seed, how many points scored for, you know, I'm going to look at all those different types of things. And then the other big thing I'm going to look at is our, you know, sit start and my process for that, and see, I'm going to see if AI can help me a little bit with looking at everything from this past season, because we've helped out a lot of different people this year, and I really want to get better at that.
All right, well, let me know when you do that too, and do your research on that, because that's definitely another episode I want to do. So
that'd be awesome.
Yeah, we'll do that for sure, because start sit process is something me and, you know, even before I started at South Harmon, just me and Scott together doing our teams, we would literally get on like a StreamYard here, not recorded or anything, and we would go over our lineups for hours, like 2 or 3 hours, like, oh, who would you start here, who would you start there. We haven't done it, you know, both of our lives have gotten busier over the last, you know, 10 years or whatever, so we don't really do that anymore. But yeah, me and Scott used to sit there for hours and hours just going through our lineups. Hey, who would you start here? Here's the lineup. How many you start? Here's the settings, all that kind of stuff. So we would kind of go over and do that too. But that's just a process that, it's not an exact science. It's not something you can just pick right every single time. Like, there's gonna be times you get wrong, you know. Here we are last week telling, you know, everybody, we would tell you to start Jalen Hurts, but guess what? Injuries happen, and he got injured. So
yeah,
it is a part of it. There's unluckiness, there's luckiness to it too. You know, like, example, let's say you were in a best ball league this week, and you like, I'm going to randomly pick up Jamison Crowder because he had a touchdown last week. And there you go. Jamison Crowder's in your lineup this week. He scores 2 touchdowns when he hasn't been relevant all year.
I didn't even know this guy was still in the league.
This guy isn't dead.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I'm probably going to use the same process I did with my underdog, where I looked at all my misses. I'm going to take out all the people that got injured. That's not going to count. You can't forecast that. But all the misses, I want to look at, is there any patterns? Is there anything that we can learn forward? And we just need to get a little bit better. Evie, you, me, and MD are actually probably a lot better than most. Not probably, we are a lot better than the industry. I know because right. I've looked at all these different rankings from the top, you know, sites, you know, in the space. We're far outperforming them. There's a reason why other people are kind of too scared to put their hit rates when it comes to that. So me being at 58%, you being right behind me at 57%, and MD being at 56%, that is, believe it or not, way better than the industry. A lot of people really miss on a lot of different stuff. So, but I want to get better at it. So,
all right, we ready for America's favorite game?
Hell yeah. Let's do
We're going to do the one that you wanted to do a couple weeks ago or last
Hell
week,
yeah.
whatever it was. We're going to do Christmas movies.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. I'm in the Christmas movie watching, you know, time of the year right now. It's been freaking amazing. So I'm
We'll do a draft on this one because there's multiple ones that we're going to have. So
you go first this time because you always have me go. Yeah, I always go first, man. So why don't you go first this time?
All right. My 101 Christmas movie, the original Die Hard.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's a really, really good one. So tell me why you love Die Hard so much.
I just love Bruce Willis as John McClane, man. He just kills it in those movies. Just watched that movie so many times. The acting, the storyline, everything, like the action in it. Really, really good movie, man. It's just all-time classic for me. And they've just always been one of my favorite movies. So easy Die Hard, the first one.
Yeah.
How about you? Who are you taking the 102?
Well, just real quick too, like I also, that has to be in my top five as well. I'm very happy because my wife was really reluctant to put Die Hard in the Christmas rotation. It's just one of those people that argues to death that it's not a Christmas movie. But here's the thing. She's completely on board now because that movie is it's not just one of the best Christmas movies of all time. It's what made Bruce Willis an action star. Before that, he was doing freaking rom-coms and Look Who's Talking as a Baby and shit like that.
right.
So that is, that's how good that movie is. But yeah, for me, 102 has to be, I watched it yesterday, National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
That has to be that's my 101 for Christmas movies of all time.
If I had to, Die Hards and all that weren't like a part of this conversation, that would definitely be my 101 as well. I love that movie. My mom loves that movie. She watches it like 75 times during the Christmas year. I can quote the movie. I have memes of the fucking movie in my phone that I use daily. All the time. Like my favorite meme is, you know, whenever somebody shows me something like you posted the what you're making today for Christmas Eve, and I would write, "She's a beaut, Clark." I always use that line. So I always use that line. Shitter's fool.
Oh, God, I was so sad that MD said at the very end of our stream, he's like, "The shitter is full." And we clipped it out, unfortunately. That would have been so good.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. That would be my 101 if we weren't including all these other movies.
And that movie gets better, at least for me, as I get older. Like, you know, seeing like how much heartache, you know, that Chevy Chase's character Griswold goes through making the perfect Christmas for his family. At the beginning, when I first watched that movie, it was just about the most insane things going wrong. But now it's just like I get and understand more of, you know, him as a father and just trying to have the perfect Christmas for his family. It gets better and better somehow.
All right. So my 103 in this draft, Die Hard 2.
Die Hard 2.
Yes. Die Hard 2. I just watched that the other night. It was on. I watched it. Like, that's for a sequel, it is just as good for me. Like, I think it's just as good as the first one. I love the whole storyline of number two as well. I can't beat it, man.
I need to. I've only seen the second one time all the way through. So I need to rewatch it. I know. Oh my God. I know. I've seen the first one at least a dozen times, and I've seen the third one, which I absolutely love, at least six or seven times. Simon says,
"God, I'm in the I'm in 60 or 70s for these movies. No joke."
Oh man, yeah, you've been religiously watching them, not just at Christmas, but multiple times probably throughout the year. I need to. So I'm going to do that probably today after we get off. I'm going to do, you know,
you got to watch number two. Yeah. Watch all three, or at least watch number two, because that's definitely one too.
Yeah. So with my 104 pick, which would be my second favorite Christmas movie of all time. This is one that does not get mentioned nearly enough, but is my absolute one of my favorites, is Scrooged with Bill Murray. I think it's Bill Murray's best movie. I think it's right there with Ghostbusters and Caddyshack. When I watch that movie, and I'm framing my next article as, you know, this character from Scrooge, I just identify so much with the character, with Bill Murray's character in that movie. He's this complete Grinch. He, you know, absolutely hates Christmas. Just thinks it's a, you know, huge, you know, fraud, that just all it is his commercialism and stuff like that. He gets pissed off at other people, but he has that one person in his life that he is at his absolute best with. So I really identify with that with my wife as well. And just how, you know, if you become completely sold out for work, how it can just turn you into just this complete monster. So the humor in it, and also to like him with the Christmas Carol, you know, motif with the ghosts of Christmas past, present, and future. It's so beautifully executed. Some of the best quotes in that movie. And then also to like Bobcat Goldthwait is so freaking hilarious in that movie. So yeah, absolutely amazing. That's one of my favorites of all time.
All right, I'm up at the 105 now. My 105 pick, I am going to take Bad Santa.
Oh, man. Bad Santa
is fucking hilarious. Just watched that one the other night, too, that was on. Like, just awesome movie, man. Billy Bob Thornton is just tremendous in it. Yeah, I absolutely love that movie. My favorite part is when he... He's in the arcade, and he's showing the one young girl how to play the pinball machine, and he's banging her from behind. That one's always great. Yeah, I love that part. That's funny.
Oh my God. But, that's another one, unfortunately. I've only seen it once. I need to watch it again.
Dude, you're going to laugh your balls off. You got to watch Bad Santa.
Yeah, I'll probably watch that. See, here's the thing. So many of my Christmas movies growing up, I had to watch with the family. And I think Mike was saying it the other night. That's not one that you can put on with the kids around.
Yeah,
so
yeah, absolutely.
I think that's a part of it. So,
all right, 106, what do you got for me? We're going to go to the 110. So we each get five each.
That would be great. Yeah, that sounds great. I think... The next one is close between two that I'm debating right now, but just for nostalgic reasons, I have to go A Christmas Story. A Christmas Story, that's the one that, you know, they had the 24-hour marathon. I think it's on like TBS or TNT that does that.
Yeah.
And there's so many freaking quotes that are just ridiculous. It's always the little things, but
your eye out, kid.
I'm just thinking of other ones, like when the dad is going insane, he's just like, not a finger, just like stuff like that. That's just completely random. But yeah, I'm drawn
Fragile must be French.
Oh, Fragile. Oh, must be Italian.
Yeah, Italian, whatever it was. Yeah.
Those parts are so freaking good. And he's like, when he says fudge, but I didn't say fudge. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's that I'm drawn to the dysfunctional families. I grew up with a dysfunctional family, so that's when I feel most at home, is when I get to see other people's problems. So that's right. That has to be in top five for me easily.
All right. My next one at the, is it the 107? Or are we at 109? I forget. 107. I'm at 107. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. So my 107, and I'm looking at a top 100 list, and I don't think it's in this top 100, which is a shame.
Dude, Eyes Wide Shut is in this freaking list of Christmas movies.
They have Terrifier. Terrifier 3, that fucking super gory fucking horror films.
Jesus Christ.
Anyways, my number, my 107 pick here. Yeah, it's not on this list, surprisingly. Lethal Weapon, the very first Lethal Weapon that happens during Christmas.
Yeah. A lot of people debate what actually the best Christmas series is of all time as far as action goes. Is it Lethal Weapon or is it Die Hard? A lot of people
I think Die Hard, but the first Lethal Weapon's a great movie too. Like, you know, there's that scene where they fight in the Christmas tree lot, and then obviously you know, Danny Glover's home is all decorated out for Christmas. There's a Christmas tree around, and they drive the car through the window and knocks the Christmas tree over and all that stuff. So, yeah, that's definitely, if we're counting Die Hard, Lethal Weapon's definitely counted in there too. So I'm going with the very first Lethal Weapon as my 107.
That's another marathon that I want to do as well. This is all the Lethal Weapon movies. So yes, probably the one that me and my wife watch to kick off every Christmas is our very first one that we watch is Jim Carrey's How the Grinch Stole Christmas. That's another one where I really identify with, just, I'm saying those quotes that, you know, Jim Carrey's Grinch is saying. I'm saying them all year around, how pissed off he is when he does not want to go out and hang out with people. He doesn't want to go to events. He just wants to be a complete recluse and just completely insane. That's another one that I think is just absolutely, absolutely amazing.
I think I saw it when it first came out. I don't think I've ever seen it since.
Oh my God. Evie, that character, the man, that's basically your avatar. Just as far as just like how pissed off and much of a, he wants to stick to himself. So you need to rewatch that movie. I think you'll really enjoy it.
Okay. All right. For my final pick here at the 109, I'm going to go with Jingle All the Way with Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sinbad and all those guys. God.
So
great movie.
Yesterday was the first time my wife ever saw it, and I was glad that we got to watch that together. Just Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's my favorite actor of all time. He's just like 90% of my childhood growing up was his Arnold Schwarzenegger movies. So being able to, another guy just like Griswold, you know, a dad that's trying to create the perfect Christmas, but you know, he doesn't have his shit together. So it's just like, of course he puts his work first and just completely screws up everything. But him and Sinbad, like Sinbad is so freaking underrated. Hilarious. Yeah. He's so good in that movie. Yeah. So I'm really glad that you picked that one.
That'll be my last one. So what do you got for the last one here?
This is sad because we're gonna have to give like a, what is it called, runners up and stuff like
an
that.
An honorable mention
because you're making me pick between Elf and Home Alone. The fact that I have to leave one of those out is kind of a travesty. But I'm just gonna go with Elf.
I've only seen Elf a couple times, so I'm not like as hardcore into it as some people are. But it's a decent movie. It's not bad.
Yeah, I think it's my favorite Will Ferrell movie. It's like between that and Step Brothers, but Elf.
Yeah, Step Brothers is fantastic. I love Semi Pro too.
Do you?
Yeah, him as Jackie Moon. Fuck yeah, that's a great movie.
But yeah, Elf. That's like, I don't know. I send out so many different Elf memes and stuff like that when it comes to this time of the year. But
yeah,
so good. So good. Especially the beginning part when they are just in the North Pole. All those effects that they did are so amazing.
Right. I was gonna say Home Alone was gonna be my my honorable mention, so we'll get Home Alone in there as well. Home Alone on this list is the number two Christmas movie on this list.
Yeah, it's at number five of this Esquire one I'm looking at right now.
I'm looking at IMDb's top 100.
Gotcha.
And we had two, we had three, we had six, we had seven, we had eight, and that's it.
Yeah.
And 11 is Bad Santa, so 11. So we didn't have all, we didn't have the entire top 10, but we didn't have number one, we didn't have four, five.
We didn't have It's a Wonderful Life.
Number one on this list.
The one that my wife introduced me to that I never watched growing up, that's her favorite, is A White Christmas. That one we watch every year. It's really, really good as well. It's got big.
Yeah, don't watch the porno version of that. I'm just kidding.
oh, honey, what the hell is this? This is Bing Crosby. But never seen A Miracle on 34th Street. I did watch the Muppets Christmas Carol for the first time last year. That was pretty good. Do you consider Nightmare Before Christmas more of a Christmas movie or more a Halloween
That's
movie?
Another one I'm going to have to watch because I don't think I've watched it since I was a kid.
Oh, okay.
But I want to see it again. Like, I know it's decent. Like, they just put Red One is up here. The new Rock movie is 36th already.
Damn, really?
Yeah. How about like this? Trash. How about this one? 39th, Batman Returns, the one with Penguin and Catwoman and Batman.
A highly underrated Keaton. Christmas movie. That's so good.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, that's another one I gotta think about maybe put up in there.
What about the claymations like Rudolph? I really actually do like Rudolph, the Island of Misfit Toys, the elf that
my
wants
favorite,
to be a dentist.
My favorite is the Mad TV version of it. Have you ever seen that?
No. Oh, my God.
I am. All right. That's going to be an offline one. I'm going to send it to you after this podcast. So.
Okay.
And you're going to have to watch. It's like a two or 3 minute video, but you're going to laugh your ass off.
The one that I want to watch probably the most that I haven't seen in a long time is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. John Candy around Christmas time, between that and Uncle Buck. He just kills it, you know, in those movies. But yeah, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with him and Steve Martin. I remember being really, really amazing. And then, of course, I have to, another honorable mention is Santa Claus movies. Tim Allen. Oh, my God. Those are so amazing.
Yeah, I thought they were okay. I was more in the Jingle All the Way. That was kind of my one that I really liked.
Yeah, I just like I watched Home Improvement all the time. I felt like Tim Allen.
Yeah, so did I. Yeah.
He was like one of my father figures growing up. So, yeah, I absolutely loved him in those ones as well.
Hell yeah.
But yeah.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this episode this week. Hopefully, everybody had a really good Christmas. Thank you for tapping in on this one. T-Rock, appreciate having you on as always, buddy. We will get you back on here soon. Might have a couple of special episodes the next 2 weeks, so not 100% confirmed on that yet, but hopefully we do. But yeah, other than that, man, at Eric Vanek NFL, at America's Game Pod, at South Harmon FF, all of us all there. You're at T-Rock 5220, right?
That's right. Thank you.
Yep, for Ray Lewis and Ed Reed.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to say Ray Lewis and Brian Dawkins.
You can do that too. I love Brian Dawkins. He's one of my favorites.
Yes. So, yeah, anything else you want to share before we sign off?
Nope. I just want everyone to be able to enjoy how they, you know, spend these holidays, you know, with friends and family. Be able to – this is the time of the year when I feel like we can be at our best when we, you know, think about other people and we try to make their lives a little bit more special. And being able to do this with you, EV, has been – really, really awesome. I really, really appreciate you, and I really appreciate all the people that tune in every week. You put in a lot of work, you know, with these shows, and you do it every freaking week. So that's not very common, you know, in this space, just to be able to have that dedication. So I really appreciate that, and I look forward to keep doing this with you moving forward. So I appreciate you, man.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I appreciate you as well for joining me. As always, we'll definitely have you on multiple times here in the off season coming up, and whenever you drop some new articles and some new stuff to talk about, we'll definitely do that. And those couple topics that we mentioned earlier, we'll definitely have you on for those too. So
appreciate that.
Hell yeah, man. So appreciate everybody. Merry Christmas to everybody again, and we will see you next week for episode 75.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal.